Justin, don't you love having a clean set of balls?
Do we mean footballs?
No, I mean my testicles. Justin, when I used to trim little Ryan, it was a risky job. My shaver would often cut me, and so the whole experience was rather unpleasant. Is it similar for you?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's usually quite uncomfortable.
Well, it doesn't have to be this way, because Manscaped have now launched in the UK. They are the ball shaving specialists. I've had a go on one of their trimmers, and it is a dream. It's designed specifically with your balls in mind. That means less accidents and a much smoother shave. Also, it's waterproof, so you can use it in the shower, and it's got an LED light, so you can see what you're doing. Justin, let me tell you, it's a life changer.
That sounds amazing. Where can I get one?
I'm glad you asked. Go to manscaped.com, and because you're a listener of this superb podcast, you can get 20% off plus free shipping if you use the code SECONDTIER. That's one word. So that's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code SECONDTIER. Manscaped. Your balls will thank you. Hello and welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks and I'm joined by the Tier System. To my circuit breaker, it's Justin Peach.
Good afternoon.
Justin, you played your first competitive football match in 11 months earlier. How did it go?
I played 6 minutes.
Six minutes. Was it a triumphant return to competitive football?
It felt like it, and it went better than someone else's return to football this week.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later on. Don't get ahead of yourself. But I'm glad you're back playing competitive football. Did it feel good to be back out there?
It did, you know, stretching the legs, being part of the team again, trying to get rid of this gut.
Well, that could take a while. Yeah. We're joined on the show today by Rich Ferraro from Forest Ramble. Richie, you well?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Getting a win under your belt always helps.
Definitely. And from the Barnsley podcast, Red Report, it's Carlo van der Watering. How's it going?
We're still waiting for that first win, but otherwise we'll be all right.
good. Before we get started, just a bit of admin. The transfer window closed on Friday and there was a lot of business that happened. So instead of talking about it later in the news part of the show, we're going to do a separate episode. It's just a quick rundown of all the business from the past week. That's been released on Monday, so keep an eye out for that. We'll undoubtedly have to talk about some of the transfer news in this episode and we'll ask our guests about a bit of it as well. So we'll start off with you, Rich, if you don't mind. Blackburn 0, Forest 1. Chris Hughton's first game in charge. A great way to kick things off with the first win of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we knew what we were getting with Hughton, which is a very nice thing to have, basically, because we knew that we'd lost the solidity that we'd previously had. Sabri Lamouchi had built the successful part of last season around looking solid and not necessarily just the back four, but also in the midfield. And it looks as though Hughton is trying to tap back into that. And admittedly, Blackburn weren't at their best, but you can only play what's in front of you, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good performance from Forest. And sure, you won from a deflected shot, but you completely shut Blackburn down and were superb going forwards.
Yeah, it was nice to have 16 efforts on goal, which is in stark contrast to the first few matches of this season, where basically we barely crossed the halfway line. And also we saw, again, some of the other things that I think Sabri kind of wanted to do, but Hughton is maybe able to tap into a little bit better, especially in those last 15 minutes when it was Amiobi and Lolly that were causing the problems.
Mm. Justin, this is the first time we've really seen someone shut down Blackburn this season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the perfect manager to do that is Chris Hughton. He knows his stuff. And obviously, the one thing Forest needed was a settled side. And you hope that they can get that going forward. But as you say, shutting down this Blackburn team right up until, you know, Forest were in the game right up until they scored. So they'll never, it was either going to be a draw and a clean sheet. And obviously, they got the 3 points. So shutting that team down, that attack was a pretty big achievement. I think going forward, that's the sort of thing that's going to give Forest confidence.
Mm. We've had plenty of your thoughts, Rich, on Sabri Lamouchi over the past few weeks. But what are your thoughts on the appointment of Chris Hughton?
Well, just like you, Ryan, I was just thinking, well, he's a proven guy. He's someone who's got a track record of success in this division. He and some Forest fans were going, oh, Eddie Howe. And one of the guys on our podcast even said, oh, Big Sam would be a good choice. And I'm going, no, don't go overboard with it.
That's Chris a bit Hughton, ironic, considering everyone's been complaining about Lamouchi's football.
Well, yeah, but I guess he had the point that Big Sam's got proven results. But I was saying, we don't need to go overboard. With Chris Hughton, we've got somebody who has that proven track record. But just as importantly, you won't hear fans of any club anywhere say anything bad about Chris Hughton. And when you've got fans of clubs where he's managed who only have good things to say about him, even Norwich fans, then that's got to be a good sign. It's a rarity in the modern game.
Yeah, true. Well, you have had four straight losses so far this season, but I'm guessing you're still thinking promotion's still a real possibility this season.
Look, let's be honest. When you've lost four games out of four, then that leaves a 42-game season. Let's be honest, OK, it's early days. And realistically, if Forest wants to get promoted, you can only really afford another four losses for automatic, looking at Leeds and West Brom last season. Maybe a little bit more for the playoffs. So 3 points is a good start. And with the squad that Forest have got, and now with Hughton in charge, they've got to be aiming high. But let's be honest, it's a long way to go.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go to you, Carlo, because you had your first game post Gerhard Struber. What were your thoughts on him leaving, and how do you think it impacted the performances so far this season?
To be fair, even amongst Barnsley fans, there's two camps. The one camp is saying, you know, his parting shot was, I don't want Barnsley sort of like, you know, in and around the relegation zone every season. I have higher ambitions, and I am querying if the owners of this club share those ambitions. And the other camp is saying, well, you know, he knew what he had. They were his players that he brought in. You know, a couple of years ago, we brought Daniel Stendel, and suddenly we had an influx of German players. We then appoint Struber. Suddenly all these Austrian players are coming in. And I think he stuck to his system so much and his formation that some of the players, to me, just underperformed. If you look at a Coley Woodrow, I think any team in the Championship, if you've got Coley Woodrow, he has to play in a number nine role, not outside the box in a number 10 working back, because, you know, he's a born goal scorer and he would not give in with Gerhard Struber. I think the worry for most Barnsley fans is that the board are sticking and the owners are sticking with this system, how they want to play the gegenpress, the high press, the high intensity. So, you know, if I was a betting man, I would put my money on an Austrian or a German or somebody coming in that's familiar with that system, but probably won't have any experience of managing in the Championship.
I've just had a look at the odds, and the bookies have got Darren Moore as the latest favourite, but I've seen loads of different managers banded about. I saw Eddie Howe as the favourite a couple of weeks ago. I can't really see that happening. Is there any preference to who you want to be as manager? I know you said you think it will be someone from abroad, but who would you want?
I think who we want, you know, we would like an English manager that can work with the relatively young squad that we've got. You know, the Cowley brothers were mentioned. Eddie Howe was mentioned. Listen, Barnsley's had, I think, including sort of like interim managers, we're on our fifth in 3 years. So I think, you know, all the betting companies have just got a standard list of anybody that's available. And as soon as the Barnsley manager goes, it gets put up there.
Clearly.
I don't think it will be a Darren Moore. I think the ownership of Barnsley, people talk about the wealth that they've got, but that's personal wealth. They're definitely not putting that into the club. And I suppose the history means it will only be a foreign coach. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a coach that worked at a, you know, a reasonable size club, but at a youth level. Because I think ultimately Barnsley are looking for a yes man that will say, I agree with, you know, the 3-4-1-2. I agree with the gegenpress. You know, I agree with bringing younger players on. But then, as always, you know, players start playing well for Barnsley, they get noticed and they leave. You know, we're still waiting on a replacement for Kiefer Moore. And he's since played for Wigan and Cardiff, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, Adam Murray is in caretaker charge, and you were coming up against a Bristol City side who had won all four games this season, but you drew 2-2. And I thought it was a good performance from Barnsley. It was certainly the best so far this season, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely. I think the first half, just having players in their natural positions. It's weird, isn't it? Clark O'Dor, who played reasonably well last season, he's just at his first full international call-up. He couldn't get a game under Struber. Woodrow played in at number nine role, so he was relieved from his duties. And I think especially the first half, Barnsley are always best if we get hold of the game in, you know, the first few minutes. You know, we scored a goal, I think it was the second or the third minute, and we kept pressing and we caused problems. You know, we caused them problems. I think in the second half, it showed that Holden tactically outmastered Murray and, you know, made a couple of changes formation-wise. And the second half, we were, well, almost nowhere to be seen, finding it very hard to create chances. And, you know, I think it was a penalty in the last minute of extra time, but because of the injury to Solbauer, it was scored in the 112th minute or whatever. But, yeah, Coley Woodrow does a miss from there. So, but overall, pleasing to see that we're now playing players in their natural positions.
Yeah, I was going to say, 112th minute when the penalty was finally scored. Coley Woodrow had to wait 10 minutes while Michael Solbauer was given treatment. He's okay, so that's good news. But Coley Woodrow was linked with a move away. He was being linked with Cardiff in the final few days of the transfer window, but instead ended up signing a new contract, which is massive news because he's a quality player, isn't he?
He is. We were all, you know, Barnsley fans were wondering if there is no investment into it. We did our show on Thursday and basically nothing had happened. And we were there was a real fear that we would lose some of our better players because I think they subtly sort of said in press interviews that if there is no investment in this squad, then, you know, we will look elsewhere. He then sent a tweet out, I think it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, saying thank you to all my fans at Barnsley. You know, I've had a really, really good time. And the club then sort of responded. And then obviously, yeah, he's with the club now till 2023. And I do think that the signings of Matty James from Leicester, who's been with us before, I know it's a couple of years ago, but he was a Rolls Royce in a team that were full of, let's call them Vauxhall Insignias. You know, Herbert Kane, I think, has proven, and even when he came on yesterday, that he looks very, very comfortable on the ball. I cannot believe that bloke's 21. I mean, you know, I've got more hair than him and I'm 49. And I think bringing those sort of players in has, I suppose, filled the players with some confidence that there is investment. The one thing we're still lacking is a target man. Somebody, you know, the best season we probably had in the last few years when we had Kiefer Moore and Coley Woodrow up front, bags of goals between them. Coley Woodrow slightly isolated, but I'm sure that'll be addressed, if not this month, probably in the next transfer window.
Yeah, just quickly on Bristol City, Justin, this is the first time they've dropped points this season. Did this performance for you show any signs that Dean Holder's men won't continue their good form?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, you know, the first Barnsley goal was poor, defending-wise. It was poor. It was a free header, floated corner. It's one of those ones that are quite easy to defend. But I just think they came up against a Barnsley team that was perhaps, you know, it's quite fresh coming off the back of a sack manager, and you've got a caretaker manager who pretty much simplifies things the way Murray did. But players still performed. Yeah, Chris Martin got another assist, for example. So I just think they came up against a trickier Barnsley than it would have been a couple of weeks ago.
Well, cheers, chaps. We'll come back to you both later on when we play Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. In the meantime, me and Justin are going to go round the grounds and we'll start off at the Liberty Stadium, where there was a shock result as Swansea were beaten 2-1 by Huddersfield. Joining us from Total Swans TV is Tom Morgan. Tom, a frustrating result because Swansea looked to be much the better side.
Yeah, certainly a very frustrating result, losing 2-1 to Huddersfield at home, given the start of the season that we have had and how well we've been playing. Maybe international break came at the wrong time for us, but no excuses really yesterday. Very disappointing result. The performance was there, the chances were there, but we just did not take those chances. Unfortunately, in the second half, Huddersfield come out the much stronger side, and Swansea paid the price for that. You know, we dominated in the first half. We really should have come out exactly the same in the second half, trying to look for a goal early on. That didn't happen, and then Huddersfield made the most of their chances. We wasted an awful lot of chances from corners and certainly clear-cut chances in front of goal.
Yeah, and the result comes after what was an eventful week in the transfer window for the Swans. Plenty of players coming in, but the headline is that Joe Roden has left the club to go to Spurs. What's the general consensus from Swansea fans on that move?
Yeah, a very busy transfer window for the Swans. Some very good activity, to be fair, on deadline day, bringing in four good players, adding a bit of depth to the squad. But obviously, all of that then is overshadowed by the Joe Roden deal. The general consensus, I'd say no Swansea City fan can really begrudge the player making that move, and nobody deserves it any more than Joe Roden from the Swansea squad. Obviously, being at the club since the age of seven, he lives and breathes the city and the football club. But you cannot begrudge a player making the move to a top flight team in the Premier League. The deal itself, the fee for the player, 11 million plus add-ons reportedly is the fee. That is where an awful lot of Swansea fans are a bit angry and a bit annoyed at the owners. I think we left it a little bit too late in the transfer window, leaving it until deadline day. We probably could have got a little bit more for him earlier on in the window.
What kind of an impact do you think Rodon's departure will have on Swansea's chances this season? Because after the first few games, Swansea were looking like promotion contenders.
Yeah, a very good start to the season. Obviously, the defeat against Huddersfield was unfortunate, but one defeat in five, three victories and one draw. It's a very good start to the season. To talk about promotions, maybe a little bit too early, but we're on the right sort of path. You know, it's an unfortunate defeat against Huddersfield. The sale of Rodon, the sort of knock-on effect that it could have in the dressing room, you know, I think that the deal was inevitable. It was always going to happen this transfer window or in January, so hopefully the players were mentally prepared for it. I know that we recruited two centre-backs to replace Joe Rodon on deadline day, so we have the strength in depth there. Hopefully those players now can step up and fill the boots of Rodon, and hopefully we can get back on track now Tuesday night against Coventry and get back to winning ways, and hopefully the departure of Rodon doesn't have too much of a knock-on effect going forward this season. And hopefully, like you say, we can continue to be promotion contenders.
Cheers, Tom. That's Tom from Total Swans TV. Yeah, Swansea fans not too happy about Rodon leaving, and the Huddersfield result won't make them any happier. But Justin, a great result for Carlos Corberan.
Yeah, you could probably say they were a tad fortunate. Obviously, Haim had five saves to make, was on top form, but I think this was a step in the right direction for Huddersfield. You know, you're starting to see Corbrand's style of play seep through. They'd 16 interceptions to Swansea's 10, which suggests that counter press is starting to come in a little bit. And obviously, they match Swansea for touches on the ball and the amount of passes as well. And obviously, Swansea are very renowned for their possession style of football. So as you said, you're starting to see Corbrand's style of play come through, and they beat a good team in Swansea unbeaten this season. Good day all round for Carlos and Huddersfield Town, I think.
We'll talk about Rodon and our thoughts on the move a bit later in the transfer roundup that we're releasing on Monday. But 7 points from their last three games for Huddersfield. And I'm very interested to see whether this purple patch continues, because they beat Forest, who were terrible, drew with Rotherham, who are fairly average, and beat Swansea here, but they were perhaps a bit fortunate. Yeah. They've got Derby in midweek, who aren't in great shape at the moment, so it could very well continue, but it'll be very interesting to see. Let's talk about the Rams now, because they lost 1-0 to Watford on Friday night. Joining us now to talk about the game is Justin Peach from the Second Tier Podcast. Justin, hello.
Good afternoon.
Actually, we'll talk about Derby in a sec, because Watford, it's their third win of the season, thanks to João Pedro, who scored a beautiful goal, Justin.
Yeah, it was one of those games that, you know, both teams were playing three centre-backs and three centre-mids. It was never going to be a classic, was it? So a moment of quality like that from João Pedro is, you know, it's either going to be that or a set piece where it comes off someone's arse. The two contrasting goals types of goals, but yeah, a good goal. And it's, you know, you saw again, you're starting to see what Watford are about. Very defensive, very structured. You just hope that they can get a bit more out of their attacking lineup, and, you know, Pedro scores a few more goals like that, or maybe just some tap-ins will be fine, I think.
Yeah, I find Watford are a bit of a weird case, because despite only losing once this season, I wouldn't say they've been particularly impressive, especially considering the big names at their disposal. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'd agree. I got panned for it a few weeks ago when I suggested that I'm yet to be impressed by Watford, and I am yet to be impressed by Watford. I think they're very, very structured. I really did like their shape on Friday, but they didn't offer much going forward. I think Derby had the better chances overall. You know, Rooney had a 1-on-1 with Foster, which he put wide, and Dwayne Holmes had a good chance to put a player through and score. So there are, I wouldn't say issues with this Watford team, but they're still nowhere near where they are capable of being.
Yeah, I think the three standout players so far have been the three young lads, Wilmot, Ngakia and Pedro. Ngakia in particular looks a real player. I'm surprised West Ham let him go. but it's worth pointing out they didn't have Ismail Assar for this game, and now that he's staying, that could be a massive, massive turning point for Watford, and they might, you know, get better and better over the next few weeks. Watford have Blackburn and Bournemouth up next. Two very interesting and tricky games there. Well, for Derby, this result makes it 4 losses out of 5 for Philip Cocu this season. Now, there are reports that he was set to be replaced by Wayne Rooney in midweek, but those were rubbish by the club, and they do seem a bit bizarre. Yeah. However, Cocu is undoubtedly under pressure, isn't he, Justin? Because the fans are growing impatient.
Well, I think with every club, there are sections of fans. There are sections of fans that have never warmed to Cocu. There are sections of fans that are on the fence, and there are sections of fans that are behind him. I don't think there's another manager out there who can get the best out of this squad, especially with Cocu, who's got almost 18 months behind him with this squad. You also got to consider the fact that Waghorn's got to come back in. Jozwiak didn't play on Friday. Tom Lawrence is coming back. We've got Colin Kassim-Richards. Yay, to come in. And I'm sure there's one I'm forgetting. Jordan Ibe as well. So there's a lot of creativity missing from Derby. If they play like this more often, they're going to keep teams out. And, you know, you add in those creative players, and Derby look a different package going forward. It was a much better performance on Friday, and you're starting to see Derby going the right direction, even though the result wasn't there.
The frustration seems to be coming from the style of play, though, and a lot of Derby fans say it's too slow. There's a lot of sideways passing.
He's Dutch.
What do you think?
He's Dutch. You know, it's that total football. That's a Dutch accent. That was terrible.
It wasn't too bad.
It was all right. It's that total football where, you know, you pass it sideways sometimes. There's not a counter press. It's being in a shape and being productive with the ball. And there are elements of that with the Derby this season. You know, they're one of the highest in the league with average possession, for example. They're one of the highest with the amount of passes recorded as well. And that's because of this style of play. And I think, as I've said, Cocu's never really had that attacking yield of players at his disposal in one collective. And as I say, you get those players.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but
at the end of the day, if you've got all that possession and you're not doing anything with it, as we say, they've lost 4 out of 5 games, then What's the point? The fans who complain about the style of play have got a point, haven't they?
No, but this is what I'm trying to get at. Is Cocker's got nothing going forward at the moment. You add those players in, they're a different customer when you put those attacking players in. And you might start to see players come out of their shell a little bit and be a bit inventive on their own, because you've got players like Jozwiak and Ibe who can do that.
Fair enough. Rotherham lost 2-1 to Norwich on Saturday. Florian Josefsson made his debut after moving from Derby. Came on in the 66th minute, had 4 touches and gave away a penalty in the 94th minute. Joining us now from the Rotherham United podcast, it's Matt Lax. Matt, this was a fairly entertaining game, but the defending wasn't great, was it?
Yeah, really, really good performance overall. An exciting game, which didn't end up in our favour, unfortunately. But we scored an early goal, missed a penalty, red card, own goal, last minute penalty. We had just about everything. But like I said, not for us. We were positive about it. It was a really, really good performance, actually. We just didn't take as chances. We made a couple of chances, obviously penalty, which we missed. And in second half, we put them under a lot of pressure. And for a team like Norwich, for us to put them under pressure is a really, really good sign for us.
Yeah, I was going to ask, from a Rotherham perspective, when you consider that there was a division separating Rotherham and Norwich last season, then when you look at the performance, then yeah, it's fairly encouraging, isn't it?
Absolutely encouraging. We've got mistakes we need to cut out. That's the second own goal we've conceded so far this season at home, and the second penalty we've conceded as well. So there are mistakes to cut out, but we've probably, other way, I've obviously had a right winger, Chiog Bene, is now injured for 4 months, which is a blow for us. But we've brought Barlaser in from Newcastle, so the squad's almost complete. So I think we are where Warnie wants us to be. And yesterday showed it. We pressed them really, really high. Pressed them into the mistake our first goal was down to us sort of pushing them into a mistake. And we did it a couple more times. It just didn't result in goals, and obviously the penalty as well, forcing them into the mistakes. There's lots and lots of positives. We just got to sort of get rid of these silly little mistakes that are costing us at the minute.
And Matt, last time we spoke, which was on the first day of the season, you said you'd take 21st now. Is that still the case?
Still the case, just take safety. What I would say is we've seen some positive signs, which probably means we could finish a bit higher than that. Also, I'm not saying we're going to be challenging playoffs or anything like that, but I think there's a reasonable chance we could end up being relatively safe, lower mid-table area. We've pushed teams like Norwich very, very close. When we went to Birmingham a few weeks ago, we probably should have won that. We were unlucky not to be not to get at least something from Millwall. That came from another silly mistake. Other than that, we pushed them hard as well. And again, Huddersfield the other week, that again, a home goal cost us a couple of points. If we can cut out these mistakes, there's no reason why we can't be pretty comfortable this season.
Cheers, Matt. That's Matt Lacks from the Rotherham United podcast. Justin, Norwich's second win of the season, and it was fairly fortunate, wasn't it, thanks to that late penalty?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, Rotherham shot themselves in the foot a couple of times in this game, and I think that's what really allowed Norwich back into it. They're still getting over last season, aren't they? For me, I think dropping Pukki would be the way forward in having Hugel up front, because I know we've slated Hugel in the past, but you know there is goals in this Norwich team, and he's very much a focal point. And obviously you take Pukki out the firing line as well, but Norwich is still nowhere near where I think they should be, and it's games like this where I think, or was I too quick to suggest they might win the league?
Well, you weren't the only one, in fairness. I've heard plenty of people tipping Norwich to win the league this season, but they are struggling a bit, aren't they? Pukki was dropped for this game, and it was Hugel who was up front. So I'm glad to know Daniel Farker listens to the podcast after I said that a couple of weeks ago. But it'll be interesting to see whether he comes back into the team. Adam Eder, who we've been given plenty of praise to, he was on the left wing, and maybe he might be given a go up front at some point as well. There was a Nathan Jones derby on Saturday, Justin, at Kenilworth Road, as Luton played Stoke. It finished 2-0 to Stoke, thanks to goals from Stephen Fletcher and Nick Powell. Ben Rowley is from the Stoke podcast, The YYY Files. Ben, it looks like Stoke are really starting to get going now.
They are picking up now, and to some extent, I think that's because Michael O'Neill has found his best 11, or is finding his best 11. We had and have a massive squad with loads of players in it, of all varying ages and abilities. And I think he's finding that a blend of young and old at the back, some pace up front, and just hard work in midfield generally with that three-back system is working. And it worked against Luton. It's worked against other teams in the past where perhaps we should have got results and didn't. But it's also fallen flat on its face. And I think that's just because we were playing the wrong players for the wrong system. He's finding that now, though. And perhaps it's the 11 that Stoke fans were calling for a while. But with players like Tyrese Campbell and Fletcher up front, Harry Soutar and Nathan Collins at the back, yeah, we're looking really strong now.
Yeah, tell us about how the game was yesterday. It seemed fairly comfortable in the end.
Maybe from an outsider's point of view, it was reasonably comfortable, but Luton did have their chances. Nathan Jones, famously after the game, says that perhaps Luton were better in every way apart from the scoreline. I don't know whether that's necessarily true. They did have a lot of chances, and it was thanks to players like Adam Davis in goal, who was absolutely fabulous once again. If you're not looking at him for one of the best goalkeepers in the division, you really should be. We had our chances too, but Luton were dangerous, and I'm not going to say that we were comfortable. It was a comfortable win in terms of we put our goals away reasonably early and we were able to settle into a final 20 minutes or so, but it could have gone the other way quite easily had it not been for a couple of really crucial interceptions at the back. But of course, you can say that about any game. That's what they're there for, and I'm glad that Stoke are finally doing their job.
I've got to ask you about young Harry Soutar at the back. We've spoken about him every time we mentioned Stoke for the past few weeks, but it's amazing that this young lad has come into the team and has been sensational, hasn't he? And then he's also got Nathan Collins alongside him as well, who's a very impressive young player as well.
The fact that they're both getting attention really worries me, because yes, they are potentially better being at such a young age than some of the older centre-backs we have. You know, we've just signed James Chester, who Aston Villa fans love, and yet he's been kept out by these two barely teenagers, if you know what I mean. Yeah, they're really good. I think their presence really helps. I think their athleticism definitely helps in a defence which has seen Stoke plagued by a lack of pace and a susceptibility to the counter-attack. We don't seem to have that anymore. But they're clever too, and I think they're working well alongside in a back three with some older centre-backs. And it just shows the quality they have. We've got Bruno Martins-Indy, who played in a, I think, World Cup semi-final. He's been sent out on loan or left the club. So they are two very good players. Harry Soutar especially is coming into his own, but Nathan Collins I'm really excited about as well.
And finally, Ben, I've got to ask you about Jack Butland, because he's now finally left the club to go to Crystal Palace for just £1 million, which is remarkable when you consider how he's been linked with a move to Bournemouth for £20 million last year. It's sensational, isn't it, how his career has declined so much in just the space of a year.
Part of me really, really feels sorry for Jack Butland. We signed him as a 19-year-old, I think, from Birmingham. He went out on loan to a couple of clubs. Begovic left. We brought him back. He was one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League. He got injured on international duty, and that really hampered his career. Stoke got relegated the following season, I believe. And then he lost his place in the England team, and it really, really hit him. He might not like to admit that, but it did. It really, really affected his confidence and his mental health, I think, as well, because he dropped off the face of the planet in terms of ability-wise, last season especially, and his stock dropped from Paul Lambert saying that he's worth over £35 million, that would get you one glove, down to letting him go for £1 million, you say. I think that Stoke have done him kind to some extent. He did have 1 year left on his deal when he left, but I think we've done him a favour because he's done so much for us and he deserves a fresh start at a new club.
Cheers, Ben. That's Ben from the YYY Files. Well, as Ben was just saying there, Justin, Harry Soutar looks a real player, doesn't he? There aren't many young lads who have come into a side and made as much of a difference as he has. We've given him plenty of praise, but we won't spend too much time talking about him. But Ben was also talking about Adam Davies in goal. He says, one of the best in the league. Do you agree?
Silly question, isn't it? Of course I agree. He's kept 10 clean sheets since he's come in for Stoke. Seven this season. Seven clean sheets this season, Ryan. Look, that's
a lot.
You know, that's credit to Michael O'Neill and obviously the defence as well. But, you know, the way he gets teams structured, they're getting the best out of Stoke now.
Yeah, definitely. From a Luton perspective, wasn't a bad performance from them, really, was it?
No, it wasn't. But I think we're starting to find out Luton's level at the moment. You know, their defeats have come from teams that are significantly better and probably better resourced than them. When we're looking at experience and ability at championship level, they've been beaten by both. It's no disgrace by any means because they've performed well in both of those games. But as well, you know, the defending for the goals was disappointing for Luton. And I think Nathan Jones will be frustrated with that because it was the same against Watford as well, which was their other defeat.
You mentioned there the funding. That's what you've got to remember with Luton, isn't it? If they were to finish mid-table this season, it would be an extraordinary season for Luton Town, especially with, as you mentioned, the resources and the lack of time that they've had in the transfer window to really strengthen themselves. It would be an amazing achievement from Nathan Jones. And at the moment, they look on course to do that because they've been really impressive, haven't they?
Yeah.
Right, let's take a break, Justin. After that, we'll talk about Birmingham, Wickham and Brentford. It's a little known fact that when Justin and I record these shows, 9 times out of 10 we're wearing a classic football shirt from years gone by. And where do we get them from? Classicfootballshirts.co.uk. In fact, as I record this, I'm wearing my PSG shirt with Thiago Silva on the back. Alternatively, I could have worn my Juventus shirt, Dortmund shirt, Blackburn shirt. I could go on. We're big fans of Classic Football Shirts here because they offer you classic football shirts at a great price. And it's not just shirts either. Oh no, dear listener. There's also training wear, tracksuits, shorts, socks, you name it. And I can guarantee they'll have something for your club. So head on over to classicfootballshirts.co.uk or visit them in store in either London or Manchester. Welcome back to the Second Tier Podcast. Right, Justin, Birmingham haven't won since the opening day and lost 1-0 to Wednesday, thanks to a penalty by Barry Bannon. James Jenkinson is from Birmingham Fan TV. James, how have things looked under Aitor Karanka so far?
So, yeah, I think if you look at the start that Birmingham City have had in terms of their opposition and the fixture that they've had and how they've actually come out of the first four games before the international break, I think they've done really well, you know, with the first four opposition being Brentford, Swansea away, Stoke away and Rotherham at home, which has proven to be a bit of a tricky fixture for most this season. I think we've started really well considering where we were at the back end of last season, conceding three every game, and this season being one of the tightest defences in the league so far.
Yeah, James, tell us about the game yesterday. It seemed like it was a very open one.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think Sheffield Wednesday definitely had the better of large portions of the game, if I'm being brutally honest. They had their chances. They probably could have made it more than one. But I think we've defended quite well this season. Etheridge has been a masterstroke for us. He's been a real solid pair of hands in goal. And then we kind of changed the system. We went through at the back, two wing backs, and really put them on the back foot for the last 15, 20 minutes. And I think, I'm not one for XG and stats, but I think the XG showed that we had a better expected goals in the end. We were creating a lot more towards the back end when we went two up front, and he brought Lee Cohen and McGree on, the two new attacking players for us.
Yeah, Birmingham have been fairly busy in the summer, haven't they, in terms of transfers? And one player who stood out for me is Ivan Sanchez, who plays on the wing. Tell us about him, because he looks an exciting player, doesn't he?
Yeah, so Sanchez has come in and he's been an incredibly exciting player so far. Obviously, a bit of an unknown quantity. I don't think many Blues fans knew about him before he come in, other than what they could see on the internet, which can be a bit deceiving sometimes. But yet he's come in and he's been probably our best attacking outlet, so to speak. He's full of flair, he's full of tricks. So nimble on the ball, he glides past people with ease. And I think there's a clip at the back end of the Stoke game where he's come in and he's beat three or four players to get us from his own box to halfway inside the Stoke area. He's definitely someone to watch out for. I think he's been one of the best rate players so far in the Championship, and certainly could catch a few by surprise this season.
And James, it is just one win under Karanka so far, but looking ahead to the rest of the season, are you still confident that you can have a good season?
Oh, for sure. I think the season is going to be more than positive under Karanka. You can already see the signs of what he's trying to do, where his predecessors have failed, so to speak. Where we've had successful managers under Rowett and Munker, they've come in and they've made us hard to beat, first of all, and then worked on the attacking side of the game on top of that foundation they lay. And Karanka's doing exactly the same blueprint. You know, we don't concede more than one at the minute. If we do concede, we're not setting the world alight going forward. We're not creating loads and scoring loads at the moment. But I want to see us build on that solid foundation, being hard to beat, resolute at the bat, not conceding many. Because if you don't concede many, you know, you give yourself a great opportunity to go and win games, and eventually it will all click. And the one win, yeah, it's a little bit underwhelming, but also only one defeat, and it's important for Blues fans to remember that going forward. And I think we'll be more than fine under Karanka's leadership.
Cheers, James. That's James from Birmingham Fan TV. Justin, not an ideal start for Birmingham. They've got Norwich in midweek as well, which will be an interesting game. What have you made of them?
Ooh, they've been very Karanka, haven't they? They've not been here nor there with the playing. They've had a lot of defensive errors. You know, they've conceded three penalties this season, which is, I think, the third highest in the league behind Norwich and Rotherham. So I think, you know, once they start cutting out those errors, you know, Karanka likes defensively solid teams. You cut out those errors and they start turning those losses into points, for example, like they have done in the previous few games, they will start to pick up some momentum. But that's all it is for Birmingham. I think once Karanka can get a bit of momentum out of this side, they'll be a difficult team to break down. But I do worry about them when they go 1-0 down, because I don't think they've got enough in them, or any Karanka side has got enough in them to turn over a 1-0 deficit.
Wednesday, steadily picking up a few results, aren't they? They've got 8 points so far and are chipping away at that 12-point deduction. It's impressive that even though they started on minus 12, they're only 7 points from safety after five games.
It is really impressive, and 13 points off the playoffs, Ryan. Hey?
Imagine if they did that. Ridiculous. But it's got to be said, if it wasn't for the points deduction, they'd be top half, I think. And that shows that Gary Monk has managed to turn around this side after what was a terrible end to last season.
I think the question that I'm going to ask is, you take out the points deduction, you know, they're on 8 points. Would you consider Sheffield Wednesday for the playoffs? Again, just ignore the points deduction, because from a squad perspective, I'm really, really happy with this balance. You know, I'd be looking up, because, you know, I think having them to be relegated was quite a faux pas for a lot of podcasters, including us, just because, you know, we're looking at that points deduction, we're thinking, I don't think they could turn that around. But they've recruited really, really well, and they've got a very good squad. So I think, you know, points deduction aside, you'd consider them for the playoffs.
I could see what you mean. I think going forwards, that's an issue, because at the moment, their striking options are, off the top of my head, Josh Windass, Jordan Rhodes, Jack Marriott now as well. It's not the best.
It's all right.
But it's all right, but it's not the best. But they have got a decent side still. They've still got plenty of players who were knocking about when they got in the playoffs a few years ago, haven't they? So I can see what you mean. The thing is, all it takes is one bad run of form, and they're right back in there, aren't they? And that 12-point deduction, sorry, is not helpful whatsoever. Justin Wickham finally scores, although it was a shit goal because of a mistake by Bartosz Białkowski, who suddenly thought it was Johan Cruyff, apparently. They lost 2-1 to Millwall. They were a bit unlucky, though, weren't they? Because they had a goal controversially ruled out. Joe Jacobson scored directly from a corner, and the referee ruled it out for seemingly nothing. Well, what did you make of it?
The referee gave it, the linesman saw it, which is impressive. But I was obviously, you know, watching the goals back, and I think it was Dean Ashton said that, I think it was Kashket was holding on to Białkowski's glove.
I couldn't really see him myself. Białkowski's
a big guy. Surely he can like shrug it off. You know, it was a poor decision, but I think you're really harsh to, like, you know, Wickham have scored, but you're still crap. You know, just let's just revel in it for a moment, because they were a lot better today, and they have, I think, slowly started to get better. I think it's a matter of time before they get a point on the board and, you know, maybe at some point a win.
Well, I will give them credit, because this was admittedly a better performance from them. Now, I famously said a couple of weeks ago that I'm not sure Wickham will win a game this season. I still think that's the case. But if they manage to build on this performance, then they'll go some way to prove me wrong. Gareth Ainsworth, still very positive as always during his post-match interviews. That man, even though he's just been cost a goal by a dodgy refereeing decision, still loving life.
I don't know how. I don't know, the advertising board behind him, I put my fist through it. I'd be so angry, because, you know, they're obviously working really hard. They're up against it already. And he's been robbed of a point, essentially.
If you could go for a drink with any manager in the Championship, would it be Gareth Ainsworth?
I think so. We've got a similar style of music, you know, similar taste in music. So I think I'd enjoy a good drink with him.
He's just a chilled out guy as well, isn't he? I reckon he's the kind of guy who would buy everyone a pint as well. He'd be more than happy to chip in with a round. Who do you think would be the manager you'd least like to go for a drink with?
Alex Neil. He's just so intense all the time, isn't he?
Do you think he'd be the kind of guy who would dip out of buying a round?
He'd buy his own drinks. I don't think he'd get involved in the rounds. I think he'd buy his own drinks and just say, I'm not doing this. No, that's you boys round up. I'm on my own.
I have met Alex Neil, and he's a nice bloke, in fairness, but he, in his interviews, he does come across as a bit grumpy sometimes, doesn't he? But at the same time, he's a lovely bloke. That's all I'm going to say.
Let's get back to it.
I have no proof of his drinking habits when it comes to the pub. What have you made of Millwall so far, Justin? We were expecting them to be challenging for the playoffs this season. Maybe a dark horse for the automatics even, but they've not been particularly convincing, have they?
No, they haven't. I think they'll be content with their start. Form's been, you know, it's been very mid-table so far, which is I think is good for them when you consider that the budget they've got behind them isn't one of the biggest. But, you know, they create a lot of chances in this game, and they come from a goal behind. So putting a positive spin it, they'll want to build on this performance and go again. And they're another team that I've recruited very well over the last week or so. So I think, you know, turning that around, I think they'd be looking forward again. But as you say, I think it's been a fairly indifferent start, not one that I expected. They've conceded a lot of chances for me, which is the disappointing thing for this Millwall team.
Yeah, well, especially in this game, because defensively, last season they were one of the most solid sides in the division, but they've come up against a Wickham side who have failed to trouble anyone really so far, and they were a bit vulnerable at times, weren't they? Jake Cooper hit the crossbar, though, from the halfway line.
And, it was effortless.
Oh, it's superb. And he made the keeper break the net at the same time. That was possibly the highlight of my weekend. That's got nothing to say about what I actually did this weekend, but there you go. An Ivan Toney double gave Brentford 3 points against Coventry. They won 2-0. Ivan Toney's got 5 goals in 3 games now, Justin. Who needs Ollie Watkins?
Do you know what? I think it was a couple of weeks ago, he missed a couple of chances, and I was so close to having like a mini 15-second rant about him and, you know, Peterborough strikers. I'm so, so glad I didn't. And, he's proved me wrong. I wasn't overly convinced, but as I say, he just said it, he's proved me wrong. You know, his first goal was a poacher's finish. His second was really good movement. You're peeling off the defender. And you put in a powerful header through it like that, it's a good goal. And it obviously, as you say, it takes him to the top of the goal scoring charts alongside Adam Armstrong, I think. And that's going to lift a lot of pressure off his shoulders, because he's the main man for Brentford. You know, Ben Rama's gone now. He's the one who's got to step up, him and Mbeumo.
The thing is, we were saying, weren't we, a couple of weeks ago, when he did miss those chances, that it feels like all he needs is just that one goal,
yep,
and he'll get going and start firing. And that's been the case, hasn't it? Because I think he could break some records this season, some goal-scoring records.
Okay.
He is so clinical, Justin, so clinical. And his movement, fantastic, as we saw with both the goals, as you mentioned, the way he just drifts off from the defenders. He took it a bit of time to get going, but I'm loving watching him now. He's confident and he's looking very, very dangerous. But it was a brilliant all-round performance from Brentford, who were quite comfortable in the end. But for Coventry, just one win this season for them. However, the losses have come against Bournemouth, Brentford and Bristol City. Three teams who you expect to be all there come the end of the season. So I don't think we can judge them too much just yet, can we? On Sunday afternoon, Cardiff beat Preston 1-0 away at Deepdale, thanks to a goal from Shea Ojo. Not a great game, this, it's got to be said. Very few chances, but Neil Harris will probably call it a brilliant defensive performance. And it was, wasn't it? Because Sean Morrison and Curtis Nelson were superb.
Yeah, I managed to watch the second half, and the amount of crosses I saw going to the box, and they dealt with everything. And it's what you expect them to do. And I think the first few games, I thought, you know, the Cardiff defence was in line for some criticism, but they've answered that against Preston. They're a perfect side to play away from home. I know it's quite difficult now without fans, but because they've got good wingers, they've got good wide players, they're very organised, and you're not obviously not expected to attack when you're playing away. So they can hit teams on the break and be relatively solid at the back. So, yeah, as you say, it's a good performance, and Morrison and Nelson were as good as they were at the tail end of last season.
I feel sorry for Filip Benkovic, who's come in on loan on transfer deadline day, and he will have watched that performance from the bench and been like, oh, Christ, I'm not going to play much this season. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into things, because he was quite impressive for Bristol City, even though they didn't play particularly well towards the end of last season. But it is only Cardiff's second win of the season. It seems like Cardiff have been lacking a bit going forward. Kiefer Moore is a superb player, as we've said plenty of times, but he's not been getting the service, and that should be better now they've got Harry Wilson, shouldn't it?
Yep, Harry Wilson's got a very good left foot, as you know, Derby fan. I know that very well. So, you know, getting crosses in the box is going to be important for Cardiff. But as well as that, you know, Kiefer Moore was involved with the counter attack. You know, he's not just a target man. You know, his movement managed to, you know, he peeled off the defender and it gave Ojo a bit of space to take it down the right and power it into the corner. So, you know, credit where credit's due. He's a good striker, but as you say, good strikers need good service as well.
Yeah, we'll talk more at length about Harry Wilson and that signing in the transfer roundup on Monday. Preston, just one win this season. Fans getting impatient with Alex Neil. I've seen a few calling for his head, but I think that might be a bit too soon at the moment. But he does need to get 3 points under his belt, doesn't he, to ease the pressure?
Yep, and as we say, he's quite a grumpy man, so maybe a smile might get fans on board. But yeah, they're a team that just, again, big team down there, Forest, Derby, just haven't got going yet. And they've got the players to do it. I still think they needed another striker in. You know, the Jakobsen signings, you know, he's inexperienced at Championship level, it's going to take him some time to get accustomed to it. So getting 3 points and keeping clean sheets would be a good start as well.
Yeah, the final couple of games, they were both goalless. Bournemouth 0, QPR 0. If there was ever a game you wouldn't expect to be 0-0, this would be it, because both teams are very handy going forwards, Justin. Final thing I've got to say about this game is Jason Tindall's voice doesn't match his face. It looks like someone else is speaking while his mouth is moving.
I've not considered that ever. That's never
next time he does an interview, watch it, I'm telling you. It's very weird.
I was going to say, I watched an interview of him this morning and it just never entered my mind.
It just instantly stood out to me. He's got a... His voice does not match his face. And Middlesbrough 0, Reading 0. This was a shit game. One shot on target. Nothing else to say about it, really. Let's talk about Who Knows Wins, Justin. This is our weekly league where you can win money from guessing the results of Championship games. It's really easy to do. All you need to do is download the Who Knows Wins app and join our league. If you guess the most correct results out of the games in the Championship each weekend, you will win loads of cash. It costs £2 centre, and the more people involved, the bigger the prize. So get your mates involved. This jackpot this week was £271, and it was split between three people: Hugh Roberts, Nick M 1969, and Paul Mac 1982. So they got £90 each. It's worth pointing out, though, they only got four results right. So if you were to get five results in this case, then you would have walked away with £270 from just a couple of quid. So get involved. Justin, we both got two correct results. I think the message there is must do better. But we've got midweek games coming up, so make sure you all join in before Tuesday. The games this week are Bristol City, Borough. Justin, which way you gone?
Bristol City.
I've gone draw. Coventry, Swansea.
I've gone draw.
I've gone Swansea. Huddersfield Derby.
I've gone Huddersfield.
I've gone Huddersfield as well. Millwall, Luton.
Millwall.
I've gone Luton. That one's the hardest one to call.
I know we've discussed Luton a bit, but this is one of them games where you think this will give them a bit of, you know, where they are in the league this season, because
yeah,
you know, it will be a good one, that.
I know what you mean. Cardiff, Bournemouth.
Cardiff.
I've gone draw. And Watford, Blackburn.
I've gone draw.
I've gone Watford. Have we agreed on any? Oh, we agreed on Huddersfield, didn't we? But very divisive this week. Very interested to see who comes out the better out of us two. There's a link to our Who Knows Wins League in the description of this podcast, so make sure you join. And yeah, let's see who can win a load of money this week. Right, it's time for this. Yes, it's time for the news. Now, the news from this past week in English football, Justin, has been dominated by Project Big Picture. Annoyingly, the news of that came out after we released our show on Sunday, but there you go. That's the joy of podcasting for you. It's since been rejected by Premier League clubs, despite rousing support from every Championship club who spoke about it prior to it being scrapped. From a Championship perspective, it would have meant two fewer teams in the Premier League, no League Cup, a Premier League team taking part in the playoffs, and most significantly, a big financial package to help clubs recover from the coronavirus pandemic. And there would have been a share of the TV money from the top flight given to EFL clubs. There were other things as well, but we haven't got that long. Justin, what were your thoughts on the plans?
I was quite frustrated with the plans to begin with. I think there are a lot of good things. Well, not good things, but there are things in it that are worth a discussion. And I think that the main point we should take away is it opens up a discussion for some sort of reform. But first impressions were it's just elite opportunism from the top six teams. You know, the first draft was in 2017. Rick Parry's got former involvement in Liverpool, and they're one of the teams involved. It doesn't strike well with me that the clubs are going down this route. Or wanting to go down this route, it creates a bigger gap in the Premier League. You've got teams like Leeds and Leicester Leicester, you know, now, and Leeds possibly in the future, are one of those teams that could break into the top six. This would eliminate that, and for me, that ambition of getting into the Premier League means you're just part of this mini league up to ninth place. What's the point?
Well, discussions are now underway for a bailout for EFL clubs. It's as Preston advisor Peter Risdale says, several Championship clubs could fold by Christmas unless they get funding, which I think is the main thing here, isn't it? You could talk about everything with Project Big Picture, but the money and bailing these clubs out is the most important thing. In more cheerful news, Justin, a parliamentary debate will take place next month on whether to let fans back in stadiums. It's after a petition calling for that to happen got more than the required 100,000 signatures. I think it got 200,000 or something like that in the end, didn't it?
Yeah.
This comes as Norwich announced they were letting fans into Carrow Road to watch the Rotherham game on a big screen TV. So you can have people in a stadium to watch a big screen television, but not to watch a match.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's so stupid. It is so stupid. And I heard Oliver Dowden, the Culture Secretary, giving his excuse for why people were let into, what was it?
It was a theatre in London, wasn't it?
Yeah, theatre in London. I can't remember which one. Something like that. Yeah. People were let in there. There wasn't much social distancing going on. And I can't remember his excuse, but it was pathetic. Absolutely pathetic.
It's something to do with the science behind it. And it's like, they can't, also when going into pubs, they say, oh, there's no science behind the virus spreading when you're in a pub. Oh, stop talking shit.
I could not put it better myself, Justin. We've said plenty on this. And this needs to be sorted out. It's annoying that the debate isn't going to be till next month, because we need fans in backing grounds as soon as possible, especially lower down the EFL. And the final bit of news, Saturday the 3rd of October was the wettest day since records began in 1891. The Met Office says downpours on the day after Storm Alex saw an average of 1.25 inches of rain across the UK. I can't remember what I was doing on the 3rd of October, but I don't remember it being particularly wet.
It's a random day, but it's pretty much been raining since we had that heat wave in April, so
yeah,
it's all merged for me. I can't remember.
That's true. All the days just merge into one now. As mentioned, we're not doing transfers in this episode. We'll cover them in a special transfer roundup episode, which is out on Monday. Right, time for some polls, Justin. At the start of the show, we asked you three questions, three very interesting questions that we wanted to get your thoughts on. The first question was this: which of these four new signings will have the best season in the Championship? Harvey Elliott, Anthony Knockaert, Patrick Roberts, or Harry Wilson? Which one out of those would you have gone for, Justin?
It's Knockaert and Hughton. Knockaert all day.
Harry Wilson came out on top. He got more than half the vote with 53%. Anthony Knockaert got 32%. Harvey Elliott got 9%. Patrick Roberts got 6%. Which of these three will turn out to be the best signing in the Premier League? Saïd Benrahma, Carlin Grant, or Joe Roden?
That's a difficult one.
Mm.
Well, the thing that's going to let down Benrahma for me is the fact he's gone to West Ham, so I'm going to say Carlin Grant.
I would say Benrahma. Just because, well, I've said plenty of times, I think he is capable of playing for one of the big six teams. And the fact that he has gone to West Ham is surprising, because I think he should have gone to a club higher up the food chain. But
it's a winger graveyard at West Ham.
There's plenty of players who have gone to West Ham and ended up being a graveyard, really, haven't they? But I think Benrahma, because he will be a big fish in a small pond, if you know what I mean. I think he'll end up being a fantastic signing for West Ham. And which version of The Office is better, the UK or the US? Now, you're very firmly in the US camp, aren't you? I'm very firmly in the UK camp. I haven't watched all of the US Office. I've only seen a few episodes, but I haven't been too impressed so far.
Yeah, the first series of the US Office is a bit meh, but the second one, you know, the wings spread and they just fly with it. It is so funny, and so much more funnier than the UK version. The UK version is far too dry for me, which is rich coming from me.
I could not disagree more. The UK Office is miles ahead for me. In fairness, I have only watched a few episodes of the US Office from outside of series one, so maybe I've not given it its full credit yet. Either way, UK Office got 73% to the US's 27%.
I don't understand these polls, because I don't get them. Also, who won? Who was the top of the Benrahma poll?
Benrahma. Did I do the results for that?
I don't think you did. No,
Benrahma poll, 63% said Benrahma, 14% said Carlin Grant, 23% said Joe Roden. So firmly in the Benrahma camp.
It's worth pointing out, Carlin Grant's the only one with Premier League experience in those three. So
good point. But we will talk about that in the transfer roundup on Monday, Justin. Right, now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon Grayson here.
So this is Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. Welcome back to the show, Rich Ferraro from the Forest Ramble and Carlo van der Watering from the Barnsley podcast, Red Report. Chaps, only one team has managed to defeat Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight so far this season. Are you confident you'll be able to win?
Give it a go. not used to winning this season.
Carlo is shaking his head furiously. So I'm going to ask the chaps here to name eight of a certain subject. All they've got to do is work together to name all eight. So, for example, if I were to say, name eight clubs beginning with the letter B who have been in the Championship, and Justin would say Brentford, that's one down, and Rich would say Blackburn, that's another down. But if Carlo would say Southampton, then he'd be out. So all you need to do, chaps, is give me eight answers without all of you being eliminated. Is that easy?
We'll give it a go.
Lovely. Gents, I thought this was only fitting because we have a Derby fan and a Forest fan here. This week, I want you to name me the eight clubs who have spent the most years in the Championship since it was rebranded in 2004. Derby are first with 16 seasons in the Championship. Who are the next eight? Justin, we'll go to you first.
Current Championship teams, right?
No, ever. since 2004. All the teams who have been in the Championship the longest. Justin, a team, please.
Well, I'll go with Forest. That's the easy one, isn't it?
Forest are there. They've been in the Championship for 14 seasons. Rich, you can go next.
Oh, he's stolen me thunder, hasn't he? this is a tough cookie, this one. Let's go for Blackburn.
Blackburn are not on there. No, I don't know how long they were in there because I haven't written that down. But Rich is out because Blackburn were not in the Championship for that long. Carlo, can you name me a team that's been in the Championship for a long old time?
Tricky one, this. I know if you talk second tier, I think Barnsley spend the most time in the second tier. So I will go for Barnsley.
Barnsley are also not on there. That means it's down to Justin, who's once again having to fight the flames on his own. Justin, can you name me seven different clubs who have been in the Championship the longest?
To try and sweep the board. It's fitting that as a Derby, Forest and a Barnsley fan, given that we've got two wins between us all season, and we completely falter here. Ipswich Town.
Ipswich are on there. They are the next longest after Derby with 15 seasons. Another one, please, Justin.
Preston.
Preston are eighth. They've got 13 seasons. So that's the line you've got to be above.
13. I'm trying to think when Burnley got promoted. I'm not going to go with Burnley. I'm going to go with Reading.
Reading are on there. They've had 14 seasons. All you need, Justin, is four more.
Okay. this is stressful. A lot of anxiety is building up here. Borough. No,
you said it. I've got to take first answer, I'm afraid. Middlesbrough are not on there. Lads, you have failed to win Simon Grayson Take for Late. How does that feel?
Yeah, this is just a reflection, like you said, Ryan, of our seasons as fans.
The other clubs you could have had were Cardiff. They've been in the Championship for 15 seasons, same as Ipswich. QPR, 14. And Leeds were 13. So you were close. Actually, you weren't close at all, were you? There you go. Once again, someone has fallen foul of Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. Will anyone ever beat us again? Who knows? Check back next week when we'll have another set of lads fighting to try and prove me wrong. Well, this has been the Second Tier Podcast. Lads, thank you for joining us today. Rich Ferraro from Forest Ramble, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Carlo van der Weltering from Red Report, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, lads.
We'll be back again on Monday when we have our transfer roundup to go through all the moves from deadline day, and then we've got midweek games this week as well, so there'll be an episode out on Thursday too. This has been the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Beach.
Thank you for listening.